This is Judge Angelita Blackshear Dalton, and when I want to know what the 411 is, I listen to Sharon Kay and What's the 411.
Thank you so much. Hello, Nashville, on this Wednesday. Oh, it's January. I am so happy. You know, I'm from snow country, and it's not doing that here. So I'm just a little happy about that. Although it does put things off balance, though, you know. The insects and the birds and all that.
It's hot, warm.
It is. Mm-hmm. It truly is. But at least we're not slipping and sliding.
That's true.
Because that could happen. I'm not even going to conjure up the,
snow,
you know,
or anything like that.
No, I'm just, you know, I'm not going to say. No, I was thinking more along the lines of Go Chiefs.
Oh.
Okay.
They say it's going to be 22 degrees on Sunday.
And what I tell you about that? Oh, my. I was in Kansas City last week, over the weekend, and that cold will cut you. That cold will cut you. And I am like, that's why I moved. That cold cut you. And I know I'm in Titans territory. Mm-hmm. Titan Nation, but it was so electric to be in Chief Nation last weekend, man. Yeah. It was like, it was so no gassing and no juicing.
Yeah.
How you think it's going to go?
It's going to be it's hard to say. I think it's going to be a good game.
Oh, it's definitely going to be a good game.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you from being at home for it, in the Kansas City area for the excitement, mm-hmm. that it was electric, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like your hair just stood on your top of your head. You know, the excitement from the fans and the people and the stunning way that game was played.
Mm-hmm.
And that Mahomes, you know, you had mentioned him to me.
Patrick Mahomes.
You had mentioned him to me about a month ago. And, you know, so he's a nice young man. He's beloved.
He is.
He's beloved, too, now. And he's got good parents.
Mm-hmm.
And he grew up with both his parents in the house, and they still are faithful. His dad's black and his mama's white. And they are still very supportive, strong with him. You know, they still together, and they root for him. And, you know, probably like teen parents, you know.
Yeah.
And he's just really a good kid. And just beloved like crazy.
Yeah.
People out there love that dude, man. So, anyway.
But go Titans.
Well, see, you know, people that knew, that my family that knows I mm-hmm. live here,
mm-hmm.
and we weren't having the discussion, those of the family that were not at the game, that were watching it on TV, how are us Tennesseans going to be? And we know our blood is Chiefs red.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So it's hard.
Well, it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I want to see. But, you know, I'm saying the Chiefs been around for 50 years, 60 years. You know, it's just, it's you know. So I don't know, because I don't want to, you know, I don't want no, you know. Getting up in my face and that, yeah. I'm not juicing, And but I will say that, you know, I'm going to have on my red shirt Sunday.
Well,
I know.
You got to support, but yeah. But I'm going for the Titans, you know.
Okay.
And a lot of, you know, we live here, and yeah. I remember when we didn't have a team here.
That's true.
So, you know,
that's
it's good to have a team here.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, and a winning team.
Now that's for a fact. Now, we'll say this about being home last weekend during the victory and all, that the Kansas City Chiefs fans respect the Titans.
Good.
They respect them. And I guess it helped to have that good victory the day before. Mm-hmm. But when the Chiefs came to Nashville and they got a spanking, they know they respect them. And the fans do, and the team does. So, and I heard my sister call me and said that they're already, the Titans are already there.
Yeah.
Practicing.
Getting acclimatized.
Well, whatever. If they think they can get ready for 20.
22 degrees.
In Arrowhead Stadium, huh? Good luck on that one.
That's going to be a game of inches that will be worn between the it'll be worn on the defense and offensive lines when it's that cold.
That's knee-knocking cold,
because it's hard to throw the football up and down the field.
It is. It's hard to concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cold in that stadium. And
but when you got a Derrick Henry out there.
Well,
it's like a grown man playing against little kids. Yeah. That's what it's been like for the past couple of weeks.
Yeah. So we'll see. I don't know. I don't want to talk trash. I don't, you know, but I'll be home talking smack. I'll be screaming. But that was fun. That was so fun. That was as close to Super Bowl as I'm going to get. You know, we had, one of my family had talked to somebody about getting their season ticket for $100 before the game. And after the game, it was like, $600-$700 for the same ticket.
Wow.
So, you know, there's going to be a lot of that going on. But there's going to be a lot of people coming up out of here, going down.
Yeah, traveling.
Yeah, going down and
supporting the team.
On that I-70. Yep. So, you know, happy trails and travel grace and mercy.
Yeah.
And hopefully you'll have decent weather.
Yeah. The only cold I'll be getting will be from the ice in my cup.
I know that's
for
right.
For a nice cold drink.
Yeah, that's, I know that's right.
I have no desire to sit in 22 degrees weather.
Lord, help me, Father. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was just, your breath just falls on the ground. You know, it's like, it cuts you. It just cuts. It cuts. So we'll have a lot of excitement. And we'll see how the how things go down. Anyway, it's two good teams, and there's always going to be a winner and a loser. Maybe next time, so we'll see. Anyway, we have such an interesting topic on the show today. We have political discussion, and of course, politics is in the air floating around. You know, we have impeachment articles being delivered. Mm. Like a loaf of bread, and about time, and things happening, and I just hope that, you know, folks aren't ignorant and not listening and paying attention and, you know, just following dumb stuff, you know, and actually pay attention, because this is a different time in our country, and our nation is seeing things some people were not even around or may not remember. It's a historic time. But, you know, it's also a time of utter insanity, I must say. So we'll be getting into that coming up to the book for this hour. These are historians, so I'm looking forward to talking with both of them. United States of Distraction is the book for this hour. And it is written by historians, and both of them are also professors at two universities, and I'll go deeper into that when I have them on. United States of Distraction, Media Manipulation, and Post-Truth America. Post-truth, my. So we're supposed to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help us God. I guess those days are gone. And this book will We'll be discussing fake news and who created it, who perpetuates it, and the things that are just going on in general as far as that's concerned. So our next hour is like chatter is how America's political parties change and how they don't. So this one will be interesting with this particular author and guest. He's an analyst, a senior analyst, and a fellow at American Enterprise Institute. So clearly these two guests and books are on the different pages, okay?
Yeah.
So we're going to enjoy having a conversation with both. Now, we got the big King Day coming up. And
that's right.
You know, all over the country, people are having different beautiful ceremonies and speakers and marches and things of that nature all over the country. And, of course, Nashville is no exception. There's a before I talk about the Monday piece, the Saturday is the MLK Joint Day of Service,
mm-hmm.
where the universities get together and do a collaborative piece on nonviolence, you know, social justice, etc. On Saturday from 10 to 4:30, this year's will be held. And about 400 and some odd student volunteers from Nashville area colleges and universities will be working on service projects. And this year's Day of Service is Sit-ins at 60, Students, Action, and Justice. And they will be commemorating the 60th anniversary of the Nashville Lunch Counter Sit-ins and the demonstrations by the college students for the cause of racial equity and justice. So that's a big, big Day of Service that is our area collaborative universities that are participating are Tennessee State University, Fisk, Belmont, Lipscomb, Meharry Medical College, Nashville State Community College, and Tribeca and Vanderbilt.
Okay.
So all the schools seem to be getting together on this.
That's good.
That's wonderful. And having this big day and the service, there's going to be a lunch and all, registration and lunch. And then they have presentations and speakers, and the volunteers will be, you know, doing a variety of things. And it sounds like a good day to stay encouraged, for the mm-hmm. people to stay encouraged. Mm-hmm. So if you are interested in participating, you certainly can contact Megan Smith. Megan Smith is the organizer, and Ms. Smith is megan.h.smith@gmail.com, and that is the MLK Joint Day of Service. Now, for our Nashville area King Day on Monday, you know, it was good to have Reverend Turner on to Sunday on the show to give us the highlights and council lady, councilwoman style, to give us the overview of what's going to be going on here in the city on Monday. And the Interdenominational Ministers Fellowship always has a big affair, and they have several days of events and activities that culminate with the march on King Day on this Monday coming. And hopefully you'll be able to participate in some of the events that they are having there. keynote speaker for the March Gentry is an MSNBC news anchor and show host, Joy Reid. And that's really a great choice. She's a very intelligent, very, very well-spoken young lady who knows perspective on things, and it's going to be an excellent affair. And I do hope that the folks from the community will come out and support the Interdenominational Ministers Fellowship for their big King Day March and activities and events. And they got all kinds of stuff going on too for the children and the young ones that, you know, will be doing various events and activities. So hopefully you will plan to, you know, face in a place or encourage somebody you know to participate. There's going to be a youth rally at 8:30 that morning. And then the march begins at 10 to the Gentry Center. And the convocation is at 11. So I am certain it's going to be a packed house and a lot of excitement in the air. We have coming up in a couple of minutes, I'll be talking with the co-authors of the new book, United States of Distraction, How Media Manipulation, or Media Manipulation rather, in Post-Truth America, and the role of news media in a free society is to investigate, inform, and provide a crucial check on political power. But does it? That would be the question. And they write about that in their new book. So these two have worked together and are familiar with each other. And so I am looking forward to chatting with the guest that will be coming up. That's historians Mickey Huff and Nolan Higdon. Anyway, let's take a time out, come back and get our traffic report and the whole shebang. Oh, Chuck, wait a minute, hold up. I guess I was thought I was going to wait. But, you know, whenever I know it's you, I stop the presses, baby, okay?
Oh.
Yeah. It's Chuck, oh my God. So, how you been?
Good, good. How about you?
Well, you know, I'm still standing. That's what I say. You know, I'm still standing. And okay. In today's media realm, that's a good thing. Uh-oh. That line we just got cut off. Well, maybe we can get him back up. I don't know. Let's take the time out, X, and then we'll pull him back up. You know how these phones and things are. They do. They have their own minds. They ain't thinking about y'all. They do what they want to do. Anyway, let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Not many people hit their stride at 88 years old. Cabaret singer Marilyn May is the exception. Next time on Jazz Night in America, Marilyn May proves that she's not only still singing, but she's better than ever. An intimate performance with the Queen of Cabaret. I'm Christian McBride, and that's next time on Jazz Night in America. Catch Jazz Night in America every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here at listener-supported Jazzy 88.
Support for WFSK comes from Silver Sands Soul Food Cafe at 937 Locklear Street. Enjoy home-style breakfast and lunch open Tuesday through Friday from 6:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Silver Sands, featuring popular family recipes passed down three generations, including smothered pork chops, potatoes and onions, salmon croquettes, fried chicken, mac and cheese, greens, hot water, cornbread, and so much more. Silver Sands, 937 Locklear Street, just like Mama used to make. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. For more information, visit SilverSandsNashville.com. Tune in on Thursdays to hear WFSK's Artist of the Week. You can win some brand new music and stay up on the latest smooth and contemporary jazz releases. This week's Artist of the Week is Spyro Gyra. Their new release is entitled Vinyl Tap. You'll hear from the group's co-founder and saxophonist, Jay Beckenstein. Don't miss the WFSK Artist of the Week during the noon hour on Thursdays. Enjoy some prime cuts, an interview with the Artist of the Week, and you can win some brand new music right here on Jazzy 88, Nashville's jazz station. Oh, Chuck, oh, Chuck, I think I hear your music now. It's the helicopter.
I didn't crash, I promise.
So it's not raining at this moment, I don't think. But I do know on cloudy days, sometimes people have difficulty coming around those interstates and all that. How do we look coming out of downtown Nashville today, Chuck?
Schedule here on the South Loop, the West Loop. Of course, Scramble is on there on 24, trying to get up past the football stadium up by Shelby. Gallatin Pike, Hickory Street, that's a wreck in Madison. Had an earlier wreck and slowed it down already. 65 North, up through Madison, past OHB, trying to get up to Vietnam then. This traffic report brought to you by Misha and Tony Tate at Exit Master. That number is 615-554-9795. Line at the DKTRealestate.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University, the United States of Distraction, Media Manipulation in Post-Truth America. Let me introduce the guest. Mickey Huff is Director of Project Censored and the President of the Media Freedom Foundation. He has edited or co-edited 10 volumes of the Censored Book, a Censored Book series, rather, and contributed numerous chapters to their annuals. And he also is a professor of social science and history at Diablo Valley College and co-chairs the history department. You need another hat? You got enough hats you're wearing, Mickey? Is that enough for you? You got five jobs. And also, let me welcome Dr. Nolan Higdon. He is professor of history and communication at California State University, East Bay, and his academic work focuses on news media, propaganda, critical media literacy, and social justice pedagogies. And we're happy to have you with us, both of you. Now, let me hear your voice, Mickey, so I can... Oh, Mickey? Okay.
Mickey was unable to make the program, so just Nolan's here today.
All right, so Dr. Nolan Higdon is here. How are you doing today?
Doing wonderful. Been an exciting sort of end of 2019 and looking forward to 2020. Plenty of work to be done.
Oh, yeah, plenty. And, you know, we do have leading headlines today. So, I mean, you and Mickey writing this book couldn't be more perfect. than delivery now. It's just tailor-made for you, for what you all do. I have, questions that galore, and I will dig that into the book in a second. But, this historic moment is going on now that Speaker Pelosi is signing the articles of impeachment. So let me get your thoughts on what's going on, Nolan.
Yeah, it's a really historical move to see a president be impeached and a trial to start in the Senate. I have to admit, though, it's with some regret, though, that this is the third time the subject has been approached with some seriousness in the last two generations. Prior to that, it only happened once. So I think it says something kind of unfortunately dysfunctional about our democracy that we keep having to go to the impeachment table mm-hmm. to deal with issues rather than have the voters or process. So it's somewhat a little bit, to me, kind of a sign of a problem with where our democracy is at, that we have to keep using impeachment because we can't sort of make these decisions through the election.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So how long were you all started on the book when, things began to unfold around the country in terms of people finally recognizing that we are in the midst of distraction and deception?
Yeah, this is kind of the interesting part of this book. I mean, at some level for our careers, it's decades in the making. But mm-hmm. if you go back, as we do in the book, people have been giving us sort of warning signs about this dating back to the mid-20th century when you had, Hofstadter warning about this, what he called like anti-intellectualism in American life. Mm-hmm. And there were other people like Morris Berman and Chris Hedges who brought this up, and Daniel Bornstein. There had been a lot of warning signs along the way. Mm-hmm. What we kind of bring to the book, and we've sort of brought to the research in the last decade or so, is we really saw how strong the media component was of all of this, mm-hmm. and that increasingly as a society we started to value celebrities. We started to pay attention to what was sensational rather than what was maybe true or important. And we started to really view the world in a very, what we call, hyper-partisan lens. Mm-hmm. That is, that truth really doesn't sort of matter. It's whether or not what's being said supports or rejects my party's position. Mm-hmm. And we worried, that would get us to some dangerous spaces. And I think Donald Trump is kind of the coming to fruition of that dangerous space. One mm-hmm. of the things we make really clear in the book is you're making a mistake if you focus on Donald Trump. This is Donald Trump is a symptom of some larger systemic problems mm-hmm. In our media, education system, but our culture and democracy as well.
So in your mind, you just got through saying in the book, you talk about years and years ago. Can you give us some examples of, years and years ago where that distraction and deception was used? Was it used during the civil rights movement?
Absolutely. I think, the framing of Vietnam War and support mm-hmm. for it was a large distraction from mm-hmm. the civil rights movement. I mean, the civil rights movement, if you go back and look at the media of that time, was always kind of framed in terms of like the Cold War. Mm-hmm. And so the very fact that people of color were challenging the racial policies of this country was treated as being tantamount to communism mm-hmm. in the news media at that time. And basically the Cold War itself was kind of, in Vietnam as an extension, was sort of a distraction from the real issues surrounding the black community and the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. More sort of recently, I think one of the critical issues I go back to is the advent of the 24-hour news network. Mm-hmm. The 24-hour news network wants to keep audience's attention 24 hours a day,
right.
But they're corporations. They want to do it for as cheap as possible. So rather than pay journalists, they pay opinion people, and a lot of these opinion people are tied to political parties. So their goal is to distract audiences from anything that hurts the political party.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, I don't know if, because I've been in the media for a long time, and I don't recall getting lied to as much as this president has lied, okay? I do recall distractions, and, you know, I do recall some things not being true and some, you know, mischaracterizations of minorities and blah, blah, blah. But this goes way past, this is bridges past anything I've ever seen. I've been working actively in the media for 41, almost 42 years, okay? I'm not a newbie, and I'm not a student, I'm not a kid. I'm a seasoned broadcaster professional. So I'm speaking from that perspective. And I don't see, you know, I see things now as much, people are believing so much of what they hear, and they're not willing to challenge it. And do you think that the reason why is because of the 24-hour news cycle?
I think it plays a crucial role. I mean, this is kind of what you're speaking to, and I think you're correct, is the success of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump wouldn't be able to lie with impunity and get away with it, mm-hmm, if we had a population that believed in news media. Mm-hmm. So that kind of raises the question, like, how come they don't believe in journalists? And I would argue, especially in the decades leading up to Donald Trump, mm-hmm, collectively, not everyone, but collectively, the news media had some serious blunders. Mm-hmm. If you think back to the Iraq War, the misreporting about things like NAFTA, allowing people like Jason Blair to report like 2,000 false stories in the New York Times. Mm-hmm. All these things, you know, put a pessimism of people's opinions about media. Mm-hmm. So some of it was real, but some of it was false. I mean, Nixon called, I feel like the press were the enemy of the people, mm-hmm, and started this pejorative term of liberal media, as mm-hmm, if anything that disagreed with conservatism was false. So right, they deemed it liberal, and Trump reinvented that with fake news.
Right.
But collectively, this discrediting the press, unfortunately, where it leaves us is now people don't trust the press to be a referee,
right,
and so they kind of just get in their camps. Republicans rally behind Trump. Liberal-leaning voters rally behind the Democrats. And what's actually true or can be proven or what is accurate is often lost in these sort of debates and discussions.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that there's some deception in this as well, because I don't know about you, but I didn't have my life threatened until the age of Trump. I didn't have somebody call the station and want to blow my face off, okay? That didn't happen. And for a lot of members of the media, you know, it's changed. It's become a scary kind of place. And I think making the media the boogeyman, and I remember when Walter Cronkite, you know, he was like the most trusted name in news. And people of that nature, they would, you know, be the ones that you would turn to. But those days are long gone.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be that type of figure or faith in the press at all. And mm-hmm, to your point, you know, there were these communities online and these white supremacist communities, mm-hmm, that have existed as long as the United States has existed. But most of the mainstream or corporate press, mm-hmm, largely ignored the existence of this group. I mean, we have to go back to 2008 when the press had the audacity to ask if we were in a post-racial society, right?
Mm. Wow.
Well, in those 10 or so years since then, I mean, these groups fostered with serious racial resentment against Barack Obama, mm-hmm, and a desire to reassert white supremacy and male dominance.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been ignored by a lot of politicians for obvious reasons. Well, Trump just tapped into them and legitimized what they were saying.
Yeah.
He tried to turn that energy online and in these circles into,
yeah,
an actual electoral movement.
Yeah.
And he did it successfully. And so now, like you point out about the death threats you're receiving, these people feel inspired. They feel legitimized by the Trump campaign, and they,
uh-huh,
see in him an opportunity to say the things that they couldn't otherwise say in society,
yeah,
or do.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people, you know, this is not, I don't want sympathy, but I'm just saying this, across the country, there's been this rash of, you know, threats and, you know, people disliking and hating you and all that stuff. And I'm like, where'd this come from? And somebody had to start it in order for it to get gin, or if it was laying in the closet, they brought it out. If because, you know, words can either lift you up or tear you down. And clearly we're in the age of getting torn down. How damaging is that to our democracy or to the communities that we all live in?
We argue in the book, you know, we talk about these vulnerabilities in America's media and education system, and we really focus a lot of our time on this hyper-partisan culture.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really one of the most dangerous threats to a democracy. And you have to remember, in American history, the Civil War came from this exact sort of climate. It was two sides that did not see any truth in the other side's argument.
Mm-hmm.
They held on to their ground. They refused to compromise. They stopped believing in the system. They stopped believing in the press.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up going to war. This is, really, really kind of dangerous for a democracy
mm-hmm.
in that sense. And I would argue that it's sort of the most pressing vulnerability. But as we talked about in a recent article we wrote on Counterpunch based on our book, one of the interesting spaces I think listeners will identify with is free speech. You have a big conservative movement right now that argues that liberals are somehow demeaning free speech on college campuses by not inviting conservative speakers
mm-hmm.
and having safe spaces and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I would believe they were advocates for free speech if they didn't ignore the fact that there's also a proliferation of hate speech that is emerging
yeah,
on campus.
Sure is.
And there's also almost 30 states that have anti-BDS laws. So
yeah.
if you're someone who wants to boycott, divest, and sanction Israel, you're not allowed to get public funding for speaking on campus. Those
mm-hmm.
tend to be liberal voices.
Mm-hmm.
So if we really were going to address free speech, we would sort of unite across the political spectrum. But when we treat it in this hyper-partisan manner, it prevents all of us from being able to engage in the protection of free
mm-hmm.
speech.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you interview a lot of conservatives for your book?
We didn't. This was basically based on primary research and scholarship, but we
mm-hmm.
used a lot of news media and writings from conservatives.
Okay.
And Mickey hosts the Project Censored radio show.
Mm-hmm.
I host the Along the Line podcast. And we try and reach out and interview conservatives as much as possible.
And what's their reaction when you reach out to them?
Generally speaking, majority of conservatives, if we talk in terms of politics, like most of the Democrats,
mm-hmm.
they will break everything down into hyper-partisan terms.
Mm-hmm.
So, you bring up something that Trump has done, and they immediately fire back, what about Obama, or
right.
something like that.
Benghazi, yeah.
Yeah. So we found if you try and depoliticize conversations and talk to people without getting into political rhetoric or policy, you can find a lot of common ground with people, but it's breaking through that sort of partisan bubble mindset, and that
yes.
can sometimes be difficult.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I've tried. Anyway, today's book is United States of Distraction, Media Manipulation in Post-Truth America, and What We Can Do About It. What can you do about it? That's what the guests have written about. One of the authors is with me. Historian Dr. Nolan Higdon. Let's take a time out and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. Watching traffic pick up quite a bit here on the South Loop. 65 making its way down into Brentwood is already on the increase. Still looks good, actually, right now on 65 up through Madison all the way up to Vietnam Vets. Harding Place at I-24. That wreck should be over to the side here in the next few minutes. This traffic report is brought to you by Princess Hot Chicken, 5814 Nolensville Pike. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
It's What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Hello, Nashville. Coming up Sunday morning at 7, news headlines and issues of the day. Then at 8 o'clock, the discussion is with producer-director Steve Ordower on his new documentary on the 1960s and 1980s gospel TV show Jubilee Showcase and the connection between gospel music and civil rights activism. Your questions and comments are always welcome.
That's What's the 411 with Sharon Kay, twice a week, every Sunday morning from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. and every Wednesday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m. right here on Jazzy 88 WFSK.
Support for WFSK comes from Nashville Public Library. Get help with your New Year's resolutions at Nashville Public Library. They have everything from Zumba and yoga to cooking classes and smoking support groups. You can connect to the best health websites for information you can trust, and it's all free. Learn more at library.nashville.org/bewell@npl. That's library.nashville.org/bewell@npl.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All righty, Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. We thank you so very much for supporting What's the 411. This hour, United States of Distraction, and the co-author of the new book is with me. He is professor of history and communication at California State University, East Bay. And you also have been a guest commentator on numerous national outlets. So we're happy to have you with us today. Now, before, I want to ask you this, because I don't know, I'm just guessing your age and stuff. Do you remember back in the 90s when, or pre-Fox cable news? I won't even call that news. I'll just say pre-Fox. I mean, seriously, because it's not news, yeah. It's propaganda.
Yeah, Fox News was a major game changer.
Yeah. Do you cover that, you know, in your book?
Yeah, we cover the changes in regulation and the changes in news media. You know, what was interesting about Fox was it was the first time that a political communications director with experience in television would head up a 24-hour network, and that, of course, was Roger Ailes.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ailes had been a political trickster working with other political tricksters like Roger Stone and Lee Atwater for almost 20 years by that point.
Mm-hmm.
And Fox News was really successful in drawing audience attention, and the other networks, rather than sort of try and malign Fox, started to emulate Fox. I don't think they ever emulated Fox with the same level of propaganda, but as far as focusing on entertainment and hyper-partisan narratives, that kind of, changed media. So, yeah, that point in 96 when Fox was launched, it's a really crucial year because MSNBC launches, and that's the year of the Telecommunications Act, and that allows us to go from about 50 corporations controlling our news media down to 6.
Right.
And we currently have potential mergers to knock us down to 4.
And that means that one voice is going to be the megaphone for the United States then, essentially.
Yeah, we're really limited in the voices, you know, we have as of now. I mean, if generally speaking, if a news story doesn't happen around like Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., or New York, it doesn't get much national coverage. And if it happens on a weekend, like, forget it. So we know, and then overseas, my God, they've like gutted the overseas bureau. So we know nothing about the people we bomb, overseas countries, anywhere outside of major like metropolitan centers. And it makes it tough to communicate or understand each other when we have such a narrow scope of news.
Yeah. Do you think that's dumbed people down in such a way that they're lulled into this, you know, crazy thing that they're lulled into?
Yeah, I think it makes it easier to start getting characters of certain parts of the country. So, you know, you start to see the South as one type of people, the Midwest is one type of people, the Westerners is one type of people. Where if you had consistent reporting from those regions, you'd see that it's a diverse batch of different types of folks. You know, there are no red states and blue states. In every red state, there's plenty of Democrats. In every blue state, there's plenty of Republicans. I mean, I live in California, which is definitely probably the most liberal state, but there's Republicans here within the state. And I was born in the state of Kentucky, in Owensboro, your neighbor state there. And I happen to go back there and see a diversity of views. So I think if we had news reporting that would illustrate that, then people would sort of get away from these kind of overly simplified characters of their fellow country people.
Well, and they're always negative, you know? I mean, just to be honest, because I remember when the Fox did come on, and it would always, you know, trash Bill Clinton and the Democrats, and, you know, they were unpatriotic. And along with that came the religious thing and the Falwells and all that stuff, and, you know, all their just cycle of craziness. And the family, focus on the family, and blah blah blah. It all came in like a package, you know. That at that particular time, it wasn't just, you know, it was the religious. And I know the Moral Majority and stuff have been around for a long time, and all that Liberty University, they've been around, but it just seemed like such a vacuum, you know. They had blanketed people at church in their sermons. In their readings, in their news and daily diet, on radio, everything was conservative talk. Trying to be in this business in today's realm, and you're not conservative, it's, you know, no differing voices. Everybody, you know, listen to country music, and everybody, you know, think like this, and everybody watch Fox. And I mean, you know, that's kind of the and I don't even know if I want to call it a bubble. I mean, it's like a net that people were wrapped in.
Yeah, we cover this in the book that conservatives started to feel coming out of the 1950s that the reason their viewpoint wasn't popular was not because they were wrong, not that their economic models are wrong or that their cultural opinions weren't popular.
Yeah.
It was that there had been some liberal bias that had taken over society. And so rather than engage with traditional organizations like higher education or media or politics, they decided to create their own institution. So like at University of Virginia, James Buchanan, in the 1950s and 60s, he created his own think tank on campus, which didn't look at things from an academic perspective. It looked at it from a conservative perspective, and they would just publish these papers, even though they had not been peer-reviewed. And other campuses and think tanks picked this up. Similarly, in the 70s, the Coors Company, which was hugely conservative, they tried to create basically what became Fox News, and they hired Roger Ailes to run this project for about 3 years. And through this organization of these think tanks and college campuses and media outlets and, as you point out, connection to the so-called Moral Majority, which was important because they had mailing lists, which was a big deal back then, that was able to create a big network, and they kind of were able to reframe American culture. I mean, in the 90s, you started to see a much more conservative culture emerge. You think of films like, you know, Forrest Gump, which were popular, and I mean, Forrest Gump is basically just kind of emaciating the counterculture of the 60s and arguing for this kind of conservative vision of America in its telling of history. And you had TV shows like The Wonder Years, which did the same thing. So it was a really, you know, the 90s was really that time when Fox News came out was a really crucial time mm-hmm. of conservatives kind of taking control of the American narrative.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it was in the media at that time, too, you know, because if you didn't have that speak or mindset, you know how hard it is to be a lone voice? You know, I'm sure you do, but I'm just saying, you know, this is a conservative place, Nashville, to a certain degree. And I'm not a conservative host, so you can just know. you know, I thank God every minute, man, that we're able to pump some sunshine into this place. Because the stations I've worked for in corporate, you know, I wouldn't have, they would have got rid of me a long time ago. So I'm grateful for African-American public radio. Now, knowing that was the case in the 90s, and take us up to, in chapter 2 of your book, Breaking News, Broken News, what is this about and what time period are you talking about?
So we're looking at sort of how news media operates in this kind of post-conservative world, when the conservatives have kind of taken back the political arms and the media system, mm-hmm. how news media functions. And what we really start to unfortunately find is that it's what we call a crumbling fourth estate. Huh. That is that it's been so deregulated that corporations have been able to take it over, and they essentially use a lot of these corporate news outlets as a propaganda wing for themselves. Mm-hmm. I think one of the most shining examples of this is the 2003 invasion of Iraq, where a lot of the very corporate news media that was informing the public mm-hmm. also had investments in the defense contracts, especially like GE was a huge defense contractor, which was associated with MSNBC. Mm-hmm. And so they're making money off the war. So it's no surprise that in the run-up to the 2003 invasion, the pro-America versus, pro-war versus anti-war guests were 25-1. Mm-hmm. And they removed people from television who had shows that were questioning the war. Bill Maher lost a show on ABC, yeah. Michael Moore on NBC, Phil Donahue and Jesse Ventura on MSNBC. Mm-hmm. People like Chris Hedges were removed from the New York Times. And these corporations just limited the scope to conversations about what would get them into war. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think you could make an analogy about that in the present, mm-hmm. in that the way the corporations are trying to frame this election is very narrow. I mean, some of these corporate news outlets definitely want to get rid of Donald Trump, mm-hmm. but in getting rid of Trump, they really want to go back to a kind of corporate status quo that's pre-Trump. They don't actually want to address critical issues in the system of racism and sexism and wealth inequality mm-hmm. and climate change and corporate responsibility. They don't want to address that, but they do want to get rid of Trump. So they frame the election very narrowly. Mm-hmm. And this affects, I think, voter outcomes. So that's kind of what we talk about in that chapter, is how the crumbling fourth estate is really threatening our democracy and setting the platform for the rise of Donald Trump.
So he's not been good for them financially?
Trump has been really good for them financially, the corporate media, in terms of how sensationalistic he is. Mm-hmm. In the campaign, everything he did that was outlandish and crazy, they would cover.
Yeah.
And he was aware of that. That's why he used the Twitter machine so often.
Yeah.
Because if he tweeted something outlandish, they'd cover it.
Yeah.
But there are some in like some folks in CNN, I think, and MSNBC who believe the Trump thing has kind of run its course.
Yeah.
But Fox is definitely still behind him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was, you know, kind of wondering because I, you know, that's part of what his you know, have people have the love of him for, because, you know, he's gonna make us rich again, you know, make us rich, you know, that's it. That's the ticket, y'all. And it didn't happen. I mean, you know, when you see iHeart let go of over 1,000 people across the country, that's serious business, man. I mean, that's corporate, that's substantial. The largest, you know, radio owner, cut them loose, yeah, all across the country.
Yeah, that's massive. Yeah, you know, Trump had just ran a brilliant campaign that tapped into like these real emotions and real feelings that people had. and he found enemies to deflect them at, you know, people of color and immigrants and liberals and big city Democrats and all that. But this is the sort of tough part for Trump and his supporters. They don't have a real solution to those problems. You can blame all these other groups, but what are you going to do about it? And you can see Trump kind of twiddling his fingers and trying to do what he can to profit himself in the White House, but there's not really solutions being offered.
Now, what do you say in Chapter 5, Make America Think Again? That would be nice, Nolan. Okay? So you have a dream, too. Dr. King had one. You have one. What are you telling us in this chapter?
Well, we think that we need, you know, we were approached by our publisher to write this book, which is City Lights Publishing, and we didn't want to just sort of write a book that depressed people. We wanted to offer solutions, and we really believe the solutions derive from strengthening our media system and transforming our education system. And so we argue for more journalists to be created, more emphasis on a free press, one that broadens the news frame and values whistleblowers. And we argue for a transformation of our education system as well. Just as media became more conservative in the 90s, so did our education system. We pushed this so-called No Child Left Behind, which tested every student. The tests actually were testing the students to test the teacher. So if the teacher is a good teacher, the students do well. Bad teacher, they do poorly. And they took money away from the schools. Well, that started in 2001. So here we are in 2019. The folks entering college are the first generation that are these multiple choice test takers. They're taught how to choose the best answer. They're not taught critical thinking. They're not taught civics. Only about 20% of our high schools mandate civics for graduation. And more importantly, they're not taught media literacy. So we've dropped this information bomb upon a generation of media without teaching them the skills how to sift through it responsibly. We've asked them to participate democratically, but haven't taught them about the democratic process. So we argue these changes need to be made in our education system, and we as educators and parents and students need to reassert that the purpose of education is not to make good little workers. It's to make good participants in a democracy.
That's true. Because, I mean, that's one of the things I notice when we have our students in here, interns and et cetera, is that they just, first thing they see, they believe it. I'm like, you know what? No. You gotta look at the source. What's the source on that? And do some homework, do some research. Because, you know, because of the information technology that they were born into, if it comes to them by a tweet or on a post, it must be the whole truth, none but the truth, so help me God. Which is, you know, of course, as we know, that's not the way it is at all. Now, in closing, I got about a second here, but I want you to wrap on your book, where it's available, how people can engage, because I think you said you do a podcast?
Yeah, we do a podcast, a Along the Line podcast. Me and my co-host, Dr. Dreadlocks, Nicholas Baham III, we sort of look at issues in the headlines, and we give some context and history to them so folks can have a better understanding of what's going on.
Excellent. Well, I want you to share that information and where the book is available as well, please.
Sure, yeah. United States of Distraction can be purchased online at projectcenter.org or at citylights.com. We always encourage you to go to projectcenter.org or citylights.com rather than Amazon, because Amazon doesn't take care of small communities, but City Lights, Project Censored, and we try to.
Oh, excellent. Well, listen, I appreciate you so much, and keep up the good work, Dr. Nolan Higdon. He is a professor of history and communication at California State University, East Bay. You take good care, and thank you so much for your time today, okay?
Hey, thanks a lot. Everyone take care. Keep rocking.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. All right, let's get our news, and then we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.